TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. To the memory of Chernobyl, consequences of the catastrophe for people and the environment. This rebroadcast is dedicated to the growing movement to close down nuclear power plants. Cesium-137 from Chernobyl was found in the Antarctic near the South Pole in snow that fell from 1987 to 1988. It will remain there radioactive for 300 years. That's according to the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation. The committee, as a rule, downplays the effects of Chernobyl. Nothing illuminates more the international scale of the Chernobyl accident. It is generally assumed that the air masses over the northern and southern hemisphere do not mix. In July 2012, the Helmholtz Center for Ocean Research in Kiel, Germany, released a report that says that radioactive water from the Fukushima nuclear reactors in Japan could reach the U.S. West Coast in the next 5 to 6 years, doubling the radioactivity of U.S. coastal waters. There's a link to this report that also states that this will all be greatly diluted on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. The finding about cesium-137 in the Antarctic is quoted on page 16 of a book, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, and there's a PDF for the whole 327 pages on tucradio.org as well. The story of this book is telling in itself, based on health data, radiological surveys, and scientific reports, some 5,000 in all. It concludes that the ongoing impacts of Chernobyl on health and the environment have been underestimated to the extreme. Accepted for publication by the New York Academy of Science in 2009, it languished for 2 years, inaccessible on their website where only members could download it, and at $150, priced out of range for most of those who needed it. The book was also downplayed, even though the scientific credentials of its authors are impeccable. Dr. Alexei Yablokov, a biologist, was former environmental advisor to the Gorbachev administration and member of the Russian Academy of Science. Physicist Dr. Vasily Nestorenko was a nuclear design engineer and former director of the Institute of Nuclear Energy of the National Academy of Sciences of Belarus. This is part one of a 4-part synopsis of and reading from the book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, that is now freely available as PDF or in book form. Here's the introduction from the original TUC radio broadcast in 2011. In the media reports about Fukushima in March and April 2011, the number of dead as a consequence of Chernobyl are frequently quoted to minimize the current danger. The World Health Organization says that about 30 first responders and plant workers died as a direct consequence of the accident, and the actual number of subsequent deaths may be 9,000. When the WHO report was first published in 2006 under the title Chernobyl Forum, the British Guardian accused the UN agency of ignoring what had by then grown to 500,000 estimated Chernobyl deaths, and pointed to an egregious form of conflict of interest. It turns out that the WHO has to clear their projects and publications with the IAEA and vice versa. And the mission of the IAEA is to, quote, promote the use of nuclear energy. Based on a 1959 agreement, the IAEA may exercise control over publications by the World Health Organization. In the early days of nuclear power, the WHO issued forthright statements on radiation risks, such as its 1956 warning, quote, "Genetic heritage is the most precious property for human beings. It determines the lives of our progeny, health and harmonious development of future generations. As experts, we affirm that the health of future generations is threatened by increasing development of the atomic industry and sources of radiation," end quote. After 1959, the WHO made no more such statements. On the 20th anniversary of the catastrophe, in April 2006, in Kiev, Ukraine, just south of Chernobyl, two international conferences were held simultaneously. The conference by supporters of nuclear power adopted the WHO IAEA report to clear the way for future nuclear developments. The other conference attendees unanimously agreed that contamination of large areas is associated with negative health effects for the populations, and they predicted an increased risk in radiation-related diseases in European countries in the coming years. Alexei Yablokov, member of the Russian Academy of Science, and Vasily Nestorenko, former director of the Belarusian Nuclear Center, were angered that the WHO IAEA based their findings on the opinions of only 100 scientists and a scant body of 350 publications, and had excluded research done on the ground in Belarus, the Ukraine, and Western Russia. Yablokov and Nestorenko were leaders among the scientists who undertook the enormous task to collect the over 1,000 titles and more than 5,000 printed and internet publications out of a body of 30,000 publications that reflect the impact of radiation, not just on the health of human beings, but on the whole ecosystem. They compiled research on rivers and lakes, the soils and the grains and vegetables growing there, wild and domestic animals, birds, fish, fungi, bacteria, viruses, trees, mushrooms and berries. A literature that shows that all creation was affected by radiation in varying degrees, but without exception. These findings were published in 2009 in the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences under the title Chernobyl: Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, and promptly ignored. After an original print run of only 700 copies, the report is no longer available from the Academy. However, the authors and editor are now offering the text for free as a PDF file, and they're placing a new print run of the book back into circulation. And it is an extraordinary and auspicious coincidence that the book should finally become freely available at a time where the world is trying to make sense of Fukushima. The similarities are uncanny. The experience gained and described is potentially life-saving. Even the chapter on mitigation, on how to treat exposed persons, how to remediate soils that are contaminated, how to get ready to live with contamination that will persist, all that can be helpful. The authors say the really important precondition to dealing with a nuclear crisis is no more lies, no more obfuscation, no more delaying of evacuation decisions. And they point to the need of independent radiation monitoring and independent ongoing health studies. All these are essential demands for Fukushima and the world. This thoroughly scientific and at the same time moving and compelling book adds to and in many ways surpasses the research done around Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There, too, evidence was at first hard to collect. Scientific research on the impact of the bombs was forbidden, not just for 3, but for the first 4 years. Scientists believe that Chernobyl released 100 times more radiation, and also radiation containing many more isotopes than the bombs. And there is agreement, even with the WHO and IAEA, that radiation from Chernobyl spread over the whole Northern Hemisphere. Even though we, far away from Chernobyl, were not informed at the time, we were and are all affected. We can now marvel at the entire Northern Hemisphere irradiation maps produced by our very own Livermore National Lab, published in this book, that we were not allowed to see at the time. And curiously, and in contradiction to so many media reports on Fukushima today that tell us not to worry about events half a world away, the EPA, the Department of Energy, the NRC, and the National Academy of Sciences all say in their publications that, quote, any amount of radiation may pose some risk for causing cancer. Any increase in dose, no matter how small, results in an incremental increase in risk, end quote. Dmytro Grudzinski is chairman of the Department of Biology at the Ukrainian Academy of Sciences. He wrote the foreword to Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. This is what he wrote. More than 22 years have passed since the Chernobyl catastrophe burst upon and changed our world. In just a few days, the air, natural waters, flowers, trees, woods, rivers, and seas turned to potential sources of danger to people, as radioactive substances emitted by the destroyed reactor fell upon all life. Throughout the Northern Hemisphere, radioactivity covered most living spaces and became a source of potential harm for all living things. Naturally, just after the failure, public response was very strong and demonstrated mistrust of atomic engineering. A number of countries decided to stop the construction of new nuclear power stations. The enormous expenses required to mitigate the negative consequences of Chernobyl at once raised the price of nuclear-generated electric power. This response disturbed the governments of many countries, international organizations, and official bodies in charge of nuclear technology, and led to a paradoxical polarization as to how to address the issues of those injured by the Chernobyl catastrophe and the effects of chronic irradiation on the health of people living in contaminated areas. When it became impossible to hide the obvious increase in radiation-related diseases, attempts were made to explain it away as being a result of nationwide fear. Some scientists even began to insist that such doses from Chernobyl would actually benefit humans and all other living things. First of all, there are very concrete data about malignant thyroid diseases in children, so even supporters of radiophobia as the principal cause of disease do not deny it. With the passage of time, oncological diseases with longer latency periods, in particular breast and lung cancers, became more frequent. From year to year, there has been an increase in non-malignant diseases, which has raised the incidence of overall morbidity in children, and the percent of practically healthy children has continued to decrease. For example, in Kyiv, Ukraine, where before the meltdown, up to 90% of children were considered healthy. The figure is now 20%. In some Ukrainian territories, there are no healthy children, and morbidity has essentially increased for all age groups. Against the background of such persuasive data, some defenders of atomic energy look specious as they deny the obvious negative effects of radiation upon populations. In fact, their reactions include almost complete refusal to fund medical and biological studies, even liquidating government bodies that were in charge of the affairs of Chernobyl. Under pressure from the nuclear lobby, officials have also diverted scientific personnel away from studying the problems caused by Chernobyl. Rapid progress in biology and medicine is a source of hope in finding ways to prevent many diseases caused by exposure to chronic nuclear radiation. And this research will advance much more quickly if it is carried out against the background of experience that Ukrainian, Belarusian, and Russian scientists and physicians gained after the Chernobyl catastrophe. The present volume probably provides the largest and most complete collection of data concerning the negative consequences of Chernobyl on the health of people and the environment. Information in this volume shows that these consequences do not decrease, but in fact are increasing and will continue to do so in the future. The main conclusion of the book is that it is impossible and wrong to forget Chernobyl. These were excerpts from the introduction to Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, by Professor Dmytro Grudzinski, Chairman of the Department of Biology at the Ukrainian Academy of Sciences. The introduction to the book, entitled The Difficult Truth About Chernobyl, was written by the late Alexei Nestorenko, his son Vasily, and Alexei Yablokov. Here is the introduction. For millions of people on this planet, the explosion of the fourth reactor of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant on April 26, 1986, divided life into two parts, before and after. The Chernobyl catastrophe was the occasion for heroism on the part of the liquidators, who worked at the site attempting to contain the escaping radiation, and, in our views, for cowardice on the part of people in public life, who were afraid to warn the population of the unimaginable threat to innocent victims. Chernobyl has become synonymous with human suffering and has brought new words into our lives. Chernobyl liquidators, children of Chernobyl, Chernobyl AIDS, Chernobyl heart, Chernobyl dust, and Chernobyl color, the scars from thyroid operations. For the past 23 years, it has been clear that there is a danger greater than nuclear weapons concealed within nuclear power. Emissions from this one reactor exceeded 100-fold the radioactive contamination of the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. No citizen of any country can be assured that he or she can be protected from radioactive contamination. One nuclear reactor can pollute half the globe. Chernobyl fallout covered the entire Northern Hemisphere. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan said in 2000, "Chernobyl is a word we would all like to erase from our memory, but more than 7 million of our fellow human beings do not have the luxury of forgetting. They are still suffering every day as a result of what happened. The exact number of victims can never be known, but 3 million children demanding treatment until 2016 represents the number of those who can be seriously ill. Their future life will be deformed by it, as well as their childhood. Many will die prematurely." Kofi Annan. This volume is an attempt to determine and document the true scale of the consequences of the Chernobyl catastrophe. Those were excerpts from the introduction to the book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. The first chapter deals with, quote, Chernobyl contamination through time and space. It represents radiation data from across the Northern Hemisphere, and not just from land measurements, but data from contaminated zooplankton 2,000 feet below sea level in the Bering Sea and North Pacific. The initial contamination of North America came from radionuclide clouds 10 kilometers high. Another important point that applies to Fukushima is that the contamination measurements, as you will see in a moment, are not just given sieverts or rads or curies. They're very specific as to the exact isotope that is emitting radiation, be it iodine-131, cesium, etc. That is essential in estimating the danger. Only specific information gives us the half-life of the isotope and the notion of how long it will persist. Also, different isotopes interact differently with water and air and present dangers to different parts of the body. So in regard to Fukushima, we need to know the names of these isotopes now, and there are over 200, not just iodine or cesium. Here's the introduction to the chapter, Contamination Through Time and Space, followed by examples. And this was written by Alexei Yablokov and Vasily Nesterenko. Radioactive contamination from the Chernobyl meltdown spread over 40% of Europe, including Austria, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Switzerland, Romania, Great Britain, Germany, Italy, France, Greece, Iceland, Slovenia, and over wide territories in Asia, including Turkey, Georgia, Armenia, Emirates, China, and over Northern Africa and North America. Nearly 400 million people resided in territories that were contaminated with radioactivity at a level higher than 0.11 curies per kilometer square. Nearly 5 million people still live with dangerous levels of radioactive contamination in Belarus, Ukraine, and European Russia. There is no reasonable explanation for the fact that the International Atomic Energy Agency and the World Health Organization have completely neglected the consequences of radioactive contamination in other countries outside Belarus, the Ukraine, and Russia, even though they received more than 50% of the Chernobyl radionuclides. To fully understand the consequences of Chernobyl, it is necessary to appreciate the scale of the disaster. Clouds of radiation reached heights between 1,500 and 10,000 meters and spread around the globe, leaving deposits of radionuclides and radioactive debris, primarily in the Northern Hemisphere. 20 years after the Chernobyl catastrophe, many areas in Europe remain contaminated. For example, in 2006, according to Great Britain's Ministry of Health, 355 farms in Wales, 11 in Scotland, and 9 in England, pasturing more than 200,000 sheep, continue to be dangerously contaminated with cesium-137. Half-life of cesium is 30 years, so it's going to be around for 300. North America. Areas in North America were contaminated from the first, most powerful explosion, which lifted a cloud of radionuclides to a height of more than 10 kilometers. Some 1% of all Chernobyl radionuclides fell on North America. Canada. There were three waves of Chernobyl airborne radioactivity over eastern Canada, composed of beryllium-7, iron-59, niobium-95, zirconium-95, ruthenium-106, iodine-131, cesium-141 and 144, cobalt-60, zinc-65, barium-140, and cesium-137. United States. The Chernobyl plumes crossed the Arctic within the lower troposphere and the Pacific Ocean within the mid-troposphere, respectively. Chernobyl isotopes of ruthenium-103 and 106, barium-140, zirconium-95, molybdenum-95, cesium-141 and 144, as well as cesium-134 and 136, iodine-132 and zirconium-95 were detected in Alaska, Oregon, Idaho, New Jersey, New York, Florida, Hawaii, and other states. You heard examples of contamination by Chernobyl radionuclides throughout the Northern Hemisphere. This was the first part of a reading from the extraordinary book, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, compiled by Alexei Yablokov, member of the Russian Academy of Science, and Vasily Nestorenko, former director of the Belarusian Nuclear Center, and his son, Alexei Nestorenko. Come back when TUC Radio returns for their data on rivers and lakes, the soils and the grains and vegetables growing there, wild and domestic animals, birds, fish, bacteria, and viruses. This is essential information for all of us who want to make sense of the Fukushima disaster and make an informed decision as to what to do about nuclear power. So come back for the next broadcast, order the book, or download the PDF file via a link on TUC Radio's website. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654. For information on how to order, you can get your CD by mail or a credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.